Now on News Talk, as part of our spring season of documentary on News Talk, producer JJ O'Shea looks at the rich heritage of fairy lore in Ireland and how it's expressed through music and song in The Gold Ring, Irish Traditional Music and the Other World.
For centuries, perhaps millennia, a belief in the other world was at the centre of Irish cultural life. A belief in a world coexisting alongside our own. The world of the Sidhe, the good people. It's a belief that's been a crucial element in the Irish psyche and imagination. There's thousands of stories, legends and songs that tell of mortal men and women who encounter otherworldly beings. Fairies, ghosts, mermaids and more. There's an abundance of fairy lore collected from all parts of Ireland, and fairy hills and forts, lone trees and place names such as Rathfarnham and Lismore are imbued with reflections of the other world. And belief in a fairy realm is found amongst those dwelling in city terraces and tenements, as well as down country boroughs. This kind of belief is not unique to Ireland, of course, but the volume and variety of fairy lore collected here is striking. Rianaki O'Gorn is co-editor of The Other World, a publication which drew on material from the National Folklore Collection to explore ways in which this belief finds expression in Irish music and song.
It's a particularly rich part of Irish oral narrative, the fairy lore. And the transfer of talent, a particular music talent, by the fairies to a mortal is very well documented in Irish tradition, exceptionally so.
But the fairies of Irish legend shouldn't be confused with those tiny, airy, gossamer-winged creatures that decorate Victorian children's books. The Sidhe are a much more robust set, capable of taking as well as giving, at once dangerous and generous. They demand respect, but they can also be the source of wondrous gifts and talents. Professor Padraig O'Haly.
The other world, and where the fairies, the fairy realms, let's say, were thought of as the source of many desired qualities. For instance, they were the source of healing. It was the source of healing. People who were known as being able to travel with the fairies, contact the fairies, that they would come back from that encounter with knowledge of healing, that they had a gift of healing. Contact with the fairies could give the gift of poetry, for instance, wisdom, prophecy, and also music. Like world of the fairies, the other world, it was the source of many of the desirable things that humans treasured, and in relation to the poetry, for instance, gaining access to a drink from the other world, water from the other world, would impart the gift of knowledge, the gift of poetry, the gift of prophecy. The poet Murty Larry O'Sullivan in the Kenmare area about 200 years ago is said to have gotten his gift of poetry from sleeping one night on the side of the road and waking up feeling very thirsty. And he goes up to towards a mountain, Knocshi, and a stream is issuing from the mountain, the fairy mountain, and he drinks from that. And thereafter, he had the gift of poetry.
Zaire me macher meise se drucht me chorex me chuples me ganne me live. Hits kewer a tal agus chal me me chors agus chwe me shamu izir krok agus glan. Ke hi hin gal har mach mali hiun alin bud se shis bevracht zis vi a folt mar an or. Gar lau shi gom mang a chams hok shi kere gafal zul. Is hok shi gom farnish imia gus chan kewel.
Music is at the heart of Irish culture. It's woven into the fabric of Irish life, and I would say it's integral even to a sense of Irish identity. It still offers a living, immediate and tangible connection with Ireland past and present. And for the immigrant at a session in Boston or London as much as for those at home. And the exceptionally talented musician is held in very high regard. So it's hardly surprising that there's an abundance of folklore related to music. One of the most common themes is the transfer of musical talent from otherworldly beings. There's a story told of Michael Coleman, the famous Sligo fiddle player, who's arguably the most influential Irish musician of the 20th century.
It says that he acquired his talent one night when he was coming from playing at an occasion in a house, and that he fell asleep in a field, and that the talent was transferred to him as he slept. And it conjures up this idea that it's almost unintentional on the part of the musician at times where the exceptional talent is transferred.
Local historian P.J. Duffy took Harry Bradshaw to the very place where this encounter was said to happen.
You're standing here now beside that field where Michael Coleman and his brother Jim were supposed to have their strange experience way at the early years of the century. But they're supposed to end up in a beautiful garden with lush grass and cattle grazing away in the fields, and they kept on walking and it opened up into a vast landscape. So they sat down on a stone and started to play music, and the music sounded the most beautiful music that ever they heard came from that fiddle that night, and it sounded and sounded and echoed across these beautiful plains. And just as sudden as it came about, the whole thing faded away. There was an noticeable improvement in the music as a result of this.
Some legends, we're told that the person acquiring the gift of music was not a musician at all. In others, we're told how a musician who has only one tune increases his store a hundredfold as a result of an encounter with the fairy realm. Just such an account was given by Mickey Doherty, a travelling musician who was recorded in a house in the Bluestack Mountains in County Donegal in January of 1949.
There was an old fiddle player one time lived in Glenfinn, and he only had the two tunes. But he was asked to go to a dance to Letterhillo, a town land they call Letterhillo. And on his way going, he had the fiddle with him, and he didn't care for going, he only had the two tunes. And as he was going along a lonely part of the road, there come a wee red-haired man out afore him. And the wee man asked him where he was going. He said he was going to a dance in Letterhillo, when he would far rather not go and counter him only having the two tunes, and he knowed there would be a big crowd there, and it would be hard to play them in music. So the wee man said to him, "What kind of a fiddle," he says, "have you with ye?" So he took the fiddle out from under his coat and he showed the fiddle to the wee man. And the wee man examined her. And he run his fingers across the strings 3 times and he handed the fiddle back to him. "Well, go on," says he, to this fiddle player. "Says he, go on," he says, "and don't be cowardly," he says, "and go on to the dance," he says, "the night," he says, "there'll be no other fiddle player there," he says, "like ye." So on he went, and when he came into the dance house, there was a very big crowd, and he took his set to play for them, and when he drew out the fiddle, he drew the bow on her, and she was twice as loud, and there wasn't a tune of 100 tunes but he had. They all got up to dance, and they said they never heard a fiddler in this world like him. So he played on to the morning, and in fact he was able to raise the roof of the house with music. But he was the best fiddle player was supposed to be in this county, and he was a good fiddle player all his life, and lived to be very old. And when he took death, on his deathbed the fiddle was hung above him, for he was lying. And when he departed, the fiddle busted on the wall. The fiddle busted on the wall when he departed. He was the name of Hurden. He was from a townland called Garwin Hill.
Sometimes a tune is given as a reward by the fairies, as in the case of one of the best-known tunes in the Irish canon. It's a multi-part jig called The Gold Ring. Co-editor of The Otherworld, Tom Sherlock, has been immersed in the traditional music scene for over 30 years.
The great Uilleann piper Seamus Ennis tells of a man hearing the most marvellous music one night as he's out walking, and he's drawn to the source of the music, and of course he comes upon a fairy fort, and inside the fairy fort, the stone circle, the fairies are dancing and playing to wonderful music. So he hides himself, but he's discovered by the fairies and they instantly disappear, leaving behind a gold ring. He keeps and minds it, and then he returns it the next day to the fairy fort. And the king of the fairies comes to him, thanks him for returning the ring, and asks him would he like anything in return. And he wisely asks for their best tune, and they give him this tune, and to this day it's called The Gold Ring.
Perhaps difficult for us today to accept that fairies, the good people, that they were a reality for many of previous generations. There is no doubt but that belief in the existence of fairies and their ability to interact with people was a widespread belief. And it is difficult to reconcile that, for instance, with an acceptance of Christianity and the view of the afterlife. There is a famous story told of an old man in County Limerick on his deathbed, and he was able to see Cnucfhyrne, which is a well-known fairy hill, from the bedroom. And when he was dying, the priest was sent for, administered the last rites, and the old man was quite happy with this. And then he straightens himself up in the bed And he looks out through the window and he sees Knochfirne and he says, it won't be long now until I'm over there with them. The idea that people go into the world of the fairies after death, that was part of fairy lore and was given belief by some people anyway, certainly in the case of that man.
The fairies were both feared and respected. And because of this fear, they were not addressed as fairies, and in conversation or in the legend material, they weren't named as fairies, but rather they were called the good people, na Daoine Maha, or na Daoine Uaisle, the gentry, or in Donegal, Bunú na Gruach, the people of the hill. So there are a number of ways of speaking about the fairies and communicating to the company who were present that the fairies were being spoken about, rather than using the word she or sheog or fairies.
An encounter also held the potential of danger.
If you don't harm them, they won't harm you. And if you are insulting to them, or if you belittle them in any way, if you build a house where their path runs, then you are going to suffer. But generally speaking, they're presented as being neutral or generally benign. Generally benign, but not always benign. Not always. Because, of course, they can take people. They can abduct human beings and leave in their place a changeling. And that was something which was very much in people's minds in former times. That, say, a child that was sick and not improving, had been sort of a chronic state of illness, it would have been mentioned that perhaps he's a changeling. And there have been many, many instances of children being mistreated, even killed sometimes, under the belief that this child isn't my child. This child is a changeling.
As I was gone down by my daddy's yarn, all alone and alone and lonely, I seen three bims and a plain a ball down by the green roadside.
There's a dark and potent song in which the ghosts of children feature. It's called Down by the Green Roadside. Tom Sherlock again.
It's kind of a mix of two songs, really. One is known usually as The Cruel Mother, which is a story about a mother who kills her children. And also the song that would be well known in Ireland, The Well Below the Valley, or The Maid and the Palmer, which is basically the story of Jesus at the well. So in this version, sung by Mickey Connors, who was a traveller from Carlow, it's sung from a man's point of view. So the man encounters children. It's assumed that this is the father of the children, but the children are dead. It's not explained how they died. They're playing at ball. They're naked as the day they were born.
There was one of them was dressed in blue, all alone and alone and lonely. And the other of them was naked, was born, and a stone by the green roadside. Oh, daddy dear, when I was yours, all alone and alone and lonely, you addressed me up in either coarsener fine, and a stone by the green roadside. Oh, babe, you know right well, all alone and alone and lonely, For when shall I go to heaven or hell? And it's down by the green roadside.
And he then asks the children what's to become of him. And they foretell the punishment that awaits him. So he's going to be, will he go to heaven or hell? He asks them. And he'll be 7 years a stone and a bridge. He'll be 7 years a mewing cat. He'll be 7 years a curl-tailed rat. He'll be seven more a pigeon in white. And then up to heaven you will take flight. And there's a refrain throughout this that is sinister and strong and just suggestive of the other world. And when you hear it, it's not hard to make that association with some of the stories that are current now that we're hearing about mother and baby homes, are about burial places in unconsecrated ground for children or babies, and some of the tragic stories that accompany Irish life through the 20th century.
All alone, all alone, alone, and up to heaven you will take your flies, and it's down by the green roadside, and that's all I know.
You're listening to The Gold Ring, Irish traditional music and the other world on Newstalk 106 to 108.
The other world beliefs expressed in music and song didn't exist in isolation. They're part of a broader belief that permeated every aspect of life. It's not my intention to try to explain or rationalise the belief in a fairy realm, but rather simply to rejoice in its expression. Fairy lore demonstrates the rich variety and poetry of the Irish creative spirit, and it also serves to remind us of the essential mystery at the heart of creation.
Otherworld activity might be expected to occur late at night, at darkness or at dusk, when there is a time of change or a time of changeover. And also these activities took place on particular days or particular times of the year, such as May Eve, for example, or Halloween was a time when one might expect ghosts and otherworldly beings to be about, and therefore mortals would have to take particular care at these times to protect themselves.
And often in the stories, the people who experience these encounters are those who could be said to live on the edge of society. The wandering musician, the travelling tinsmith, the wise woman. And they bring back knowledge of something that can be of benefit to the broader society. But equally, the other world can impact on the lives of ordinary people going about their daily business. Several stories refer to the dangers of interfering with fairy forts and lone bushes on the land. My mother, Hannah O'Shea, remembers an incident in Ana Scoil in the late 1920s.
One of our neighbours had a field that there happened to be a fort in. And one day in this field, he noticed that the ditch in the field near the fort was broken down. And he tried to fix it. But as he was fixing it, he went and took a screw from the fort and put it on the ditch and thought nothing of it, even though they used to be told way back that they shouldn't interfere with forts. But anyway, he went home and had his dinner and went to bed, but he got an awful pain in his finger as he was trying to sleep, and he could not sleep at all. So in the morning, he still had a pain in his finger, and he decided, could it ever be possible that I should not have taken that piece from the fort? So he went back to the field, took the screw out of the ditch and put it back where it was in the fort. And lo and behold, the pain went from his finger. So from that day on, he certainly wouldn't touch the fort. I knew the man very well. I was only about 14 or 15 at the time, but I knew him very well. He was a nice neighbour, and he certainly wasn't one that he'd go making up stories.
Shochron she won the meadows now he hagas thorts ma weens in a ligger breque. Achter a wilg of evil he a shosh grifo, her flies her face to shacham in the hood. Vi taugach bian, vi raugach tian, vi barali fian an arins karewa. Nor war it in the Sienach Dina Silta, Gonchola here the Viermove.
An interesting question is, who are the fairies?
One strand of fairy tradition links them very closely with the dead. For instance, stories of somebody out late at night seeing lights or hearing music in the fairy fort, or me encountering a group of people who are having a dance somewhere on the roadside. And he's surprised naturally, and then he begins looking at them, and he notices amongst them are people from his own community, people he knew, relatives and so on, who had died recently. And here they were, with the fairies. And stories of people who were brought into the world of the fairies, meeting their dead relatives, who sometimes warned them, get out of here, don't eat the food here. And the dead and the fairies are fairly closely assimilated in Irish tradition. The boundary between them is not always clear at all. No. So, I mean, these kind of stories where people encounter their dead relatives, these show, I think, a very strong belief in the existence of fairies, because people had a strong belief in the existence of life after death.
The line between ghosts and fairies is at best blurred. The Donegal fiddle player John Doherty gave a vivid account of a strange appearance by the piper, Paddy Bourne, quickly.
There's one thing I do know, that the creatures they were heard playing. Oh, indeed they were heard playing. And there was a piper one time, his name was Quigley. And he played the pipes everywhere from Glenfin to Glencorum, killing from there to the Rosses. And I think up this far. They called him Paddy Bourne Quigley. Oh, he was a good piper. But in any case, the poor soul, he was invited to play in Ballinamore, near Broca, or away beyond Glenties. He was invited for to play there at a party. And, oh God, it was a party that was to be in Ballinamore. But in any case, he was a proud kind of a man. He had a proud notion. And it was all walking that time. There was no cars. There were no cars, and it was all walking, but he walked on till he went to Glenties. And there was a woman living in Glenties. She ran a sort of a cafe there, and he thought he would go in and have his dinner. And she just spoke freely to him, you know, that he would have to take his time till those other people would be served. And Jane, what do you think? Didn't he take a huff? And he walked out, and he wouldn't halt. And he had then 10 miles to go to Ballinamore, and he walked it all along. And when he went as far as a place called Sherrigan School, the poor soul, he gave up there. He took what they call They call it in Irish fargartha. That's a hunger weakness. He took that hunger weakness and he died there. Ah, the poor soul, he was got then. He was dead. He used to go into Glencolum Guildford to play for the people in there on the pipes. And he used to go on as far as a place called Malinbeg. People knew him very well. But in any case, the fishermen there would go on out, you see, a bit out from the big cliffs, you know, to fish. And some time after Paddy Barn Quigley died, the men, they were out on a wee boat, three men, and just there the piper began, just up on the face of the spank, or cliff as I would call it. And one man called up an Irish, it was all Irish, was going, Kay at the Shinyaman Shin. And the ward answered back, Tha Musha, Paddy Barn Quigley. And the man dead. A cliff of 900 feet. Nobody could stand there or be there. And so the men got so very much afraid that they turned the boat and they come back home. And it was the man's voice, surely the dead man's voice. Aye, Paddy Barn Quigley. Oh, he was a splendid piper.
Another recurring theme is the child or adult abducted by the fairies, who's then rescued by a parent or a lover. In one version of this story, collected in Castlereagh, a musician is taken away for playing a forbidden fairy reel. His mother saves him, with the aid of a travelling woman, by pulling him off a coal black horse when the fairies are travelling from one fort to another. This is very similar to a verse in the song known as Tamlin. The song tells the story of a man stolen by the Queen of the Fairies.
Oh, tell to me, Tamlin, she said, why came you here to dwell? The Queen of Fairy caught me when from my horse I fell. And at the end of 7 years, she pays a tithe to hell. I so fair and full of flesh, and feared it be myself.
The man sends precise instructions to his lover to pull him off a certain white horse on Halloween night when the fairy folk would be riding past Mark's Cross, and not to be afraid when he is turned first into a bear, then a fiery snake, and finally into the man who is the father of her child.
But tonight is Halloween and the fairy folk ride. Those that would let true love win, at Mars Cross they must bide. So first let pass the horses black, and then let pass the brown. Quickly run to the white steed, and pull the rider down. The first thing that they'll turn me to, is into a bear so mild. So hold me fast and fear me not, I'm the father of your child. The next thing that they'll turn me to is into a fiery snake. Hold me fast and fear me not, I'm a man of God's own make. The next thing that they'll turn me to is into a naked man. Roll your mantle round my waist, and then you have me one.
Belief ran deep.
The nature of a legend, any legend, is that it has to at least have a sort of a degree of credibility that makes it at least possible to argue, well, could it have been or could it, was it not? And the tellers of fairy legends were very, very definitely trying to impress on their audience that this happened. and the belief in fairies was widespread, because belief sort of springs from the sincerity with which a person communicates the message. And these stories were not told as jokes. They were not told to kind of while away the time. They were told to illustrate what can happen if you encounter the other world.
But what of belief in a parallel world today?
I suppose in 20th and 21st century terms, that's, you know, you could be opening yourself to ridicule. But in Ireland, of course, such beliefs are commonplace, and they do still exist today. I mean, there are still people I know, people who live in Dublin, who live in the centre of a large city, who have no difficulty in asserting a belief in the Banshee. Even to this day, there are people who won't directly refer to fairies by name, you know, and talk about the little people, the good people, the terms like that. And that indicates the continuation of a level of belief. It's not explicitly stated, but it's implied or quietly communicated.
Understandably, people will have a hesitancy or uncertainty when talking about these things.
Ambivalence is a factor here in belief associated with the other world. There's a beautiful example where, interestingly, a Dublin man, Edward Kendellan, is talking about belief in the Banshee. And he says twice in his brief introduction, if there is such a thing.
Oh, I could tell you a Banshee woman. As a matter of fact, if there is such a thing, I have heard it twice. If there is such a thing, I'm not saying there is. It's an unmerciful wail. You often hear the cats now at night, you know. Well, now they're only in the shade. This wail I heard is unmerciful. But on each occasion, there was a death in the one house in this terrace.
Or Paddy Heatherman talking about fairy hurling in Tipperary and his father's story. And if you listen to him, he laughs nervously as he suggests it.
My father used to tell a story one time of a little man appearing to him.
And that's almost as if to apologise, you know. But when you hear him tell the story, there's a surety and a certainty in how he delivers it. And you believe him.
The fairies just huddle out on the hill, out in the field. They'd be out there huddling some night, and they'll ask you to come in huddling with them, and don't take a huddle from any one of them. Go home.
So that level of ambivalence is always there.
In many ways, the life of the fairies is similar to our own. They have needs and desires just as we do. They get hungry, they get jealous. And for recreation, the fairies had their own games too.
They would have hurling games or football games. And the fairies of Connacht would play the fairies of Munster and this kind of thing. Fairies go to the fair, and they could buy a cow or you could sell a cow. And the fairies under the sea could be spinning. Nets would, in one of the stories, the fisherman's net brings in a spinning wheel. Fairies need meal and flour and so on, so they come and ask for it. The world that the fairies are thought of as inhabiting is very closely resembles the world that we live in as well.
There were several pishogues to do with work on the farm, especially the making of butter. For many small farmers, the income from their butter might be the only bit of money coming in at certain times of the year, so it was a serious problem if the cream didn't turn properly. As a child, my mother was told of something that happened to her grandparents. This was an event that happened in the late 1800s, and it's a tale that's a curious mix of the other world and Christianity.
This is a story that my mother told me when I was quite young, and it all happened in her parents' house. They were farmers, and they used to make butter every week from the cream of that they collected from the cows. But this particular week, they had the cream in the churn and started twisting and twisting, but it just wouldn't turn into butter. So they were very worried, because that would be their income every week. They'd sell the butter in the local shop, and they didn't know what to think about it, or what would they do. So they just thought, oh, well, we'll ask the priest. Maybe he could help in some way. And the priest came, and the first thing he asked was, did anybody come into the room while you were trying to make the butter? And I said, yes. But she was a local woman that would not try to do any harm to us in any way. And he said, do you know if she's had God bless the work? He said, I'm not sure. So the priest said, tell her to come back again and come into the room and you start making the butter again and make sure that she do say God bless the work. Because in them days it was very important that no matter what job was going on in the house, if you came in, you'd say God bless the work to the people of the house. So the neighbour called again to the house, and they started to make the butter as usual, and she said, God bless the work, and the cream turned into butter as it always did.
The fairies can also give people the gift of healing. For instance, the well-known a healing woman, Biddy Early, in County Clare. She is said to have been given a bottle by the fairies, and that this bottle was really the source of her knowledge and also of her ability to heal. That the bottle was a gift from the fairies, and it was through this bottle that she could exercise the power of healing people and being able to foretell what would happen and know things that happened in the past that she wouldn't have access to knowledge about other than through some supernatural intervention. There's also another wonderful story told of Murcha O'Lee, who is said to have been abducted by fairies and taken out to Ibrazel and spent a long time in Ibrazel. And when he wanted to leave Ibrazel, he was given a book which contained the remedies for all human ailments. And he was left back on the shore in Galway, where he came from, with this book. And in some versions he's told not to open it for a certain date, before a certain date, but he does. And because he did, he doesn't know the cure for all the ailments that beset human beings, but he knew a lot of them. And it's an interesting story, because the Lees were the hereditary physicians to the O'Flahertys. And when the O'Flahertys lost their lands, the Lees lost their status and so on. And it has been surmised that this story was invented to give this particular member of the Lee family, to give him credibility as a healer, that he had this book.
And the fact that this member of the Lee family might invent such a story only serves to further illustrate the depth of belief in the fairies. This was his proof, his evidence, his license to practice. he'd learnt his craft from the fairies. The music played on this programme was The Lilting Banshee, as whistled by Robert Harvey, Aron na Shia Gi, The Song of the Fairies, was sung by Roisin Elsefti, The Boys of the Loch and the Merry Blacksmith were performed by Michael Coleman, and Galway piper Cormac Cannon played the Gold Ring. Down by the Green Road Sidham was sung by Mickey Connors, and Shocron Shi, Set Astray by the Fairies, by Sir Loge Ní Shanoan. Anya Fury sang Tam Lin, The Lone Bush was played on the flute by Tara Diamond, and The Banshee Reel on the Tin Whistle by Mikko Russell. All the recordings were published as part of The Other World, Music and Song from Irish Tradition by Rianochi O'Gorn and Tom Sherlock.
The Gold Ring, Irish Traditional Music and The Other World was produced and presented by JJ O'Shea and was supported by a grant from the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland as part of the Sound and Vision Scheme.